Have you ever been driving with a spouse or a parent and they absolutely refused to stop for directions? Every dad that just said no is probably lying. You know, where do you think this unwillingness to ask for help stems from? I will say that I have been a little bit guilty of this as well. I really enjoy driving in Vancouver. You know, you might think I'm crazy, but I actually really do enjoy the fast-pacedness of the city, and I like challenging myself to know if I know how to get around without the map. So, and I, you know, I go to Vancouver pretty often, so I have a pretty good sense of where things are. So usually I am fine to get around without the map, but I can admit that yes, I've gotten lost before. But why are we so unwilling to ask for help? I have a few thoughts. I wonder if this might be some unaddressed pride. You know, I have to know that I can get around Vancouver by myself, because why? Perhaps it is for the sense of accomplishment that we get when we do something on our own and we don't have to ask anyone else for help. You know, why do I have this feeling that somehow asking for help makes me inferior? I think we can have this struggle when it comes to our relationships as well. We have unspoken expectations and frustrations with friends and spouses and siblings and kids and so on, and then we get upset when it's left unsolved. I think we can have the same thing with God. How often do we expect God to answer our prayers before we ask Him? Now, God is certainly capable of this, and God does know more about what we actually need than we do. But I think there's something to be said about coming to God for help. With all this being said, we're going to read a passage today about this very thing in just a minute here. So this summer, we've been in a series called The Words of Jesus. And I'm not going to lie, when I started thinking about what to speak about today, I quite literally Googled the phrase, "What did Jesus say about dot, dot, dot?" Now, if you're curious, I'm going to share some of the Google answers with you just for fun. So these were the top results that came up when you Google, what did Jesus say about blank? Love, forgiveness, children, hell, the Bible, tithing, Sabbath, polygamy, heaven, and the Ten Commandments. So we're actually going to break down all of those this morning together. No, we won't actually do that. None of these I actually chose for this passage today. So I started praying for God to reveal something for me. And I realized that I have really been in a time of my life where I have been experiencing a great amount of change. You know, I am historically someone who hasn't done that well with change. And I, you know, maybe I'm evolving as I grow up and I'm nearing the ripe age of 30, because I'm finding myself a little bit more excited than nervous about the changes that are coming up in my life. However, this year, as some of you may know, I decided to resign from my job here at Ross Road and go back to school for a master's degree. I also decided to sell my apartment and buy a new one. And as some of you may know, I also went through quite a lot of personal hardships at the beginning of this year. And I won't go into all of those things today, but this is just painting the picture that this has been a very large season of transition for me. This is a lot of change happening all at once. And I thought about speaking on, you know, the idea of building your house on solid ground or something in that vein. But the more I thought about it, I reflected on just how much this year I've really had to ask and seek and knock. So you never guess what passage we're going to speak about. We're going to read from Matthew 7, verses 7 to 12, entitled Ask, Seek, Knock. So I'm going to turn to Matthew 7, verses 7 to 12, and read from there. It says, "Ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, the one who seeks finds, and to the one who knocks the door will be opened. Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake? If you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father in heaven give good gifts to those who ask him? So in everything, do to others what you would have them do to you. For this sums up the law and the prophets." Now, what is the context of this passage? This is Jesus speaking to the disciples and a large crowd of listeners during the Sermon on the Mount. He's also coming to the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount here. So one could make a bold assumption that placing this at the end of his sermon is not without intention. This is a call to action. And we see Jesus in this passage give an extreme example here to get his point across. He says, "Which of you, if your son asks for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, will give him a snake?" Of course, I would hope you wouldn't do this as a parent. Although sometimes growing up, it did feel this way. You know, if I would ask my mom, "Can we go to Subway?" And she says, "Well, we have sandwich stuff at home." And, you know, it was never the same. Something about that Subway sandwich bread. But even here, you know, if my mom didn't take me to Subway for the day, it was probably because she was paying for the roof over my head or the dance classes that I would take every day. We don't always see the big picture. Now, unfortunately, I won't actually be spending the next 15 minutes or so telling you knock-knock jokes, although I did consider it, of course. But what I do want to do is I want to just break down this passage in the easiest way that I could think of: ask, seek, and knock. I literally couldn't have picked a more perfect passage for a 3-point sermon. We ask him, we seek him, and we wait for him. This is a progression that intensifies. We ask before we seek, and we seek before we knock. Now, has anybody actually noticed that we're at a place in society where we sometimes don't even want to knock on a door because it feels too aggressive? Like, if I am showing up at someone's house that I don't know that well, I would almost prefer to text them and say, "I'm here," rather than walk up to the door and knock on the door. It seems like we want to be 100% certain that we are at the right place before we even knock on the door. You know, we'll come back to that a little bit later, but I want to pivot for now. In the youth ministry at Ross Road here, we place a high value on prayer. As the leaders, we begin the night with prayer, and we also conclude the night with prayer, which includes a time to go around as the youth leaders and share if we have any prayer requests. We also do this during our small group times, during youth evenings with our students. We end the discussion times by, you know, asking if anyone has prayer requests, and then the students and leaders will pray for each other. So we have actually coined a phrase for when a prayer request gets answered, and we call this a happy yay. I believe this was a Caleb Rosborough original, if you know who that is. You know, this is us making a point to share when a prayer has been answered. And, you know, I will say I have really admired the commitment to prayer that our leaders have exemplified over the years. We have had leaders who have created a shared note document on their phone with their small group, where they can share prayer requests on their own devices and they can check them off as they've been answered. I've always admired how this group of youth leaders at Ross Road seem to remember what is going on in each other's lives. And the community of prayer that we have cultivated, I see going through all of these stages: the asking, the seeking, and the waiting. We bring our requests to God, we follow up with each other on them, and we keep knocking until that prayer request is answered. So like I said, I want to break down these three things for a few minutes here, starting with the ask. So we ask him. We make our requests known to God. Now, when I think about what I spend the most time doing in prayer, it is no surprise that the first thing that comes to mind is I make requests to God. When we talk about prayer requests during youth, yes, we do have those happy yays, and these are always worth celebrating. But it seems that there is, you know, especially on a youth night, there's always a hamster that needs prayer or an upcoming test to be prayed for, at least with some of the students. And now, to maybe those of us in here who have maybe asked God for something a bit heavier, we might initially hear these requests and think, man, doesn't God have bigger things to deal with up there? But the cool thing is that God actually hears all of these requests and deeply cares about every single thing. And now, a question that I think we need to be motivating ourselves before we ask God with something, no matter how great or small it might be, is what motives are we asking with? If you find yourself asking for God to spite your sibling for getting you into trouble, or that maybe someone we have an issue with to experience pain and hardship, I can almost guarantee that this doesn't line up with God's will, and there's probably a not great motive there. There's a verse in James, and it says, "You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures." Now there's another verse in James that goes like this, or sorry, John, not James. "I tell you the truth, my Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. Until now you have not asked for anything in my name. Ask and you will receive, and your joy will be complete." Are we asking in God's name? Are we placing our whole trust in Him? I think it's also worth noting that the way God views the world and our perception of time is so much different than the way we view it. And I think sometimes what we pray for might actually be contradictory to what someone else needs. I think we have to start going against the grain and stop thinking of ourselves as the main character. Now, for an example of this, I think back to last year at Adventure Camp, and we were experiencing quite a bit of rain. And Adventure Camp is an event that is primarily outdoors. So, you know, I'm thinking here, oof, I'm running an event with a lot of kids that is outside. I could really use it, you know, I could really use some sun here. So I'm praying for it not to rain. Meanwhile, our province was burning with wildfires. I need to remember that I'm not the main character here. The need of rain was much greater than my desire to not have damp children. Although I will say during the week, we prayed a lot. And we even discussed the topic of prayer with our students. And even though rain was forecasted for the whole week, we managed to have clear skies during the day. And then immediately when we would return back to the church from our outings each day, the rain would start again. Pretty cool thing. Now, another verse here highlighting how God answers prayer is in John 15:7, and it says, "If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be given to you." And you know, we can't simply interpret these passages just to mean that we will ask what or we will receive whatever we ask for. For one, we don't always really know what is best for us. You know, if I ask God for $1 million, I mean, in this economy, it'll get me a few trips to the grocery store. But realistically, God knows I don't need that. There are certainly people who need money more than I do. Now, a few minutes I asked you, why does asking for help make us feel inferior? I think we have such a deep desire to accomplish something on our own, but I really believe that asking for help is a sign of strength and not a sign of weakness. To humble ourselves to realize I can't actually do this on my own is a very powerful thing to do. Now let's talk about seeking Him. Now, have any of you watching ever played hide and seek? My favorite thing when I play hide and seek with my niece is she says, "Okay, you go hide here and I'll count." And then of course she finds me because, you know, she finds me with ease because she knows where I'm hiding because she told me, "You go hide there." Now, the seeking part of hide and seek is typically a bit more challenging as you normally don't know where the person is hiding. In seeking, I am looking for someone. I am remembering where I already looked and thinking of new places that they could be. Seeking is a matter of paying attention. Sometimes when I'm playing hide and seek, I am just thinking, come on, how can you not see me? It's gotta be obvious. Do you ever think that God feels that way with us? Maybe God is there and wanting to give us an answer, but we are too busy seeking elsewhere and we're missing it. You know, I'm sure you've maybe heard of the tale where there's a man drowning and he prays for God to help him, to bring him to safety, and he turns down a canoe, a lifeboat, a helicopter, because he says, "God will save me." You can see the irony here. Now, what might God be trying to do that we are missing because we're just not looking? There's a verse in Jeremiah 29:12, and it says, "Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart. I will be found by you, and declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity." You know, I read a context on, I read a commentary on this passage in Matthew that said, God promises an answer to the one who diligently seeks him. We must remember that it doesn't say God says yes to all prayers to the one who diligently seeks him, but that he answers them. I think seeking is less about what we are asking for and more about who we are asking. Will we continue to seek him in the midst of what we are going through? Will we remember that he is actually there? Now, lastly, let's talk about the knocking. We wait for him. Knock until the door is opened. So maybe not in all circumstances, but if I'm going to the door as a salesman or perhaps a very old trick-or-treater, if I knock and I don't get an answer, then I'll probably just walk away because I'm not actually sure if anybody's home. But if I know someone's home and I have plans with them and I'm trying to reach them, then of course I'm gonna go there and stay and wait until the door is opened. Now, do you have those friends where you can just walk right into their homes? It's pretty special. I have a lot of friends like this. And this is because that they know that we are coming over. We have confidence that they are okay with us entering their home, and I don't have to ask to be let in. Now, I personally believe that if Jesus was on the earth today, he would have an open door policy too. But that's aside from the main point. But maybe we're simply forgetting the ask step and we're jumping straight to the knocking. The door isn't shut tight with a deadbolt at all. We knock on the door anticipating an answer, but maybe we haven't actually asked yet. Maybe we don't truly believe that the door can be answered. Knocking indicates action. Now, do we actually believe that God is at home? Do we sometimes feel like he's on a coffee break and he's not answering the door? I have felt that way. I have felt that way this year. I want to say that I once had a friendship with someone that really kind of fell apart back in about 2019 or 2020, and I was really hurt by this. And I prayed for a while, and then I kind of got discouraged, and I just assumed that there was no hope for rekindling this friendship. And I kind of got to a place too where I was like, you know, I don't need a friendship with this person, and I'll settle for, you know, being at a place where we're not in bad blood with each other. And I started to pray about this in the last year again or so, because I didn't actually realize how much it was still bothering me until I had a counseling session and I realized that there was some hurt about this still. And this year I interacted with this person for the first time since 2020, and it cleared up a mountain of anxiety that I had been carrying. Prayer works. Asking, seeking, knocking. I decided that I wasn't going to stop knocking on that door, and it finally opened. William Barclay said in his commentary on this passage, Jesus wants us to be persistent in our prayer and to always keep knocking. Now, what happens when God says no or doesn't answer? You know, if we were to not ask this question, this would be a really neat and tidy place to just stop and put a bow on this sermon. That would be the easy way out. But if you've ever experienced great hardship in your life, I'm sure you've been waiting for this portion of this talk. It can be really easy to understand this passage before we think about what great pain and suffering there is in this world. You know, what about when God doesn't put an end to such gruesome wars that are taking place right now across the world? What about when we lose loved ones, when they have a sickness that isn't healed? This idea that God knows what is better for us can be a little harder to comprehend when we see how much hurt is really out there. You know, I can comprehend that God hasn't answered a prayer yet, maybe about someone's salvation, because more time needs to pass first. It's just not the right time. The answer isn't no, it's just wait. But trying to comprehend the answer to prayer being wait when it comes to genocide around the world, whew, I won't lie, I have a tougher time with that one. And I am not in any way going to sit here and try to tell you that I have the answer to this. I will say that my understanding begins here. And I will say begins because I am nowhere near a conclusion when it comes to this question. But what I do know is that there's evil in this world. And I also believe that we have free will. And tragically, evil and free will together can be a deadly combination. So what can we actually do when it comes to the great pains around this world? It can be a really intimidating world to look into. So perhaps find your corner of what you're passionate about and start there. Are you passionate about countries that are being affected by genocide? You know, go online and find someone who's more knowledgeable on the subject. Find a GoFundMe that you can donate to. You know, are you passionate about solving the issue of poverty? Talk to someone who works for Food for the Hungry. Are you passionate about abusive animals? Talk to the SPCA. Are you passionate about people experiencing homelessness? You know, talk to Archway, Salvation Army, check out what they're doing. And then, of course, to wrap up this sermon in somewhat of a neat bow, ask, seek, and knock. Keep praying. Don't be discouraged when you haven't seen an answer. You know, think back to other times that God has answered your prayers, or maybe you know someone else and they have a story about how God answered their prayer. Hold on to those things. I also want to make it clear that I do not believe that an unanswered prayer or a no means you are a bad Christian. I don't believe that in any way. I want to also say that it is okay to still have questions about God and to ask and seek and knock. You don't have to have it all figured out in order to send up a prayer to God. He still hears them all. Now, remember to the back of this message when I said that I think we like to be certain about who's behind a door before we knock on it. Let's come back to that for a minute. Prayer is actually something that is done by a large percentage of the world. I would dare even say half the world population. Now, how many of those prayers, though, are actually directed to God? You know, that is up in the air. I'm sure you've all seen someone throw around the phrase that my thoughts and prayers are with you by someone who's not a Christian. When I actually reflect on God that I am, or when I reflect on the God that I am praying to and the power that he holds, my perspective starts to shift. I'm not just sending empty requests and praises up into the universe and hoping that someone up there stumbles across them. God is all powerful and hears all of our prayers. Now, how he does this all at once, I'll never understand. He must be very organized. All of this to say, I am eternally grateful that I know exactly who is behind the door that I am knocking on. And lastly, if you're listening today and you feel like you have been knocking on that door for a long time with no hope to answer, I want to encourage you, keep knocking, keep seeking, keep waiting. God hears you and he loves you and he cares for you. So ask him, seek him, and wait for him. Let's pray. God, I thank you that you are a God who does answer prayer. And God, sometimes we don't understand the timing in which those prayers are answered, but I thank you that you hear them all. God, I pray that we would continue to ask and that we would continue to seek you and that we would continue to wait for you. God, we love you, and I just pray all of this in Jesus' name. Amen.